It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
This is the Hockey News Podcast.
It's the Hockey News Podcast, presented by BetMGM McKenney Hockey. I'm Mike Stevens, Ryan Kennedy. We like to start off the show by saying it's the best time of the year. It really is, obviously, because, I mean, second round is great. Has been a little underwhelming in terms of drama, I'd say, from a drama perspective, because it seems either teams are either going to lose in a blowout, or on the other side, teams are going to just curb stomp their opponents. There is no in-between. There's no close games, basically. No in-between. Ryan, what is going on?
Yeah, it's very interesting, and I think part of it, I have two theories.
Okay.
One of which is...
Conspiracy
Not conspiracy theories. This is sort of, you know, we have some very high-octane teams in this postseason still, in this second round, where things can go one of two very different ways. You have the New Jersey Devils, who we know, especially during the regular season, tremendous rush team, great offense. And then obviously the Edmonton Oilers as well, where, you know, just powerhouse offense and that, you know, immaculate power play that they have. But things can also go wrong when they play an opponent that can either deflect that or, you know, sort of absorb that attack and counterattack in this specific case, Carolina and Vegas. The other theory I have is that most of the sort of great goalies are out already. Vasilevsky.
Yeah, he's gone.
Shesterkin, Sorokin, Hellebuck.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen magic from Marc-Andre Fleury in the past. Even a guy like, you know, Matt Murray, who had a couple of great runs with Pittsburgh years ago, obviously on the shelf for Toronto.
Well, he's healthy now. He's backing up on Wednesday night.
There you go. But has not played yet.
They went to a 24-year-old rookie instead of him, so there you go.
Exactly. Yeah. But I think that might be a factor as well, is that you have still some of the most tremendous offensive players in the game, your Jack Hughes's, your Dreisaitl's, your McDavid's, but you do not have your Vezina Trophy candidates on the other side. So those are my two theories as to why we're seeing some pretty wide open scores. And, of course, the unstoppable second-round force that is Jordan Martinuk.
Yeah, oh my goodness. What, 9 points now? Like, it's crazy. I think you're right. Basically, there are a lot of teams that are top-heavy, I'd say, left. Like, like you said, there are the Edmonton Oilers who have the power play merchants, as I like to call them. They're the crazy sort of, like, you know, they have the two best. I would say it's pretty definitive now. They have the two best players in the game. Like,
yeah.
I don't think there's any, like, well, they have two of the... No, I think those are, like, McDavid and Draisaitl, they're basically cemented there, at least for right now, as we're recording.
If you were voting on the Conn Smythe right now, it would be Draisaitl.
Draisaitl, McDavid, you think? Or no, not
maybe
even...
Maybe Rupi Hintz.
Yeah, or Jordan Martinuk, man. Like, he's up there. And also, if you look at... you're right, you have a lot of good goalies that are out. If you look at the goalies that we have left in, it's not a murderer's row. Sergei Bobrovsky, Joseph Woll, you know, could be great. I don't know, but he's a rookie.
we'll find out tonight.
We have Phil Grubauer / Martin Jones, you know.
Yeah.
One of the three Carolina guys that cannot ever land on one, you know.
Right.
And you know, all of them have their, I would say, like, flaws in this situation. The only, I would say, superstar left when it comes down to it is Jake Oettinger.
Yeah, and he's been up and down based on how well the Kraken have played in this second round.
Yes.
The amount of firepower they've been able to generate, particularly in that first game where he got shelled really quickly.
Yeah, which you never see. All right. Well, the biggest story, I would say, in hockey, even as the playoffs are going on, it's a draft lottery.
Mm-hmm.
And so everyone, you know, waiting in, you know, in hot anticipation to see where Connor Bedard will almost certainly end up. You know, obviously it's not the draft yet. We don't, like, just because a team won the lottery, maybe they'll go off the board. No, they're not.
No.
Connor Bedard.
Yeah.
And so, the Chicago Blackhawks, they win the draft lottery. Look, I would say it's probably the worst possible scenario the league could have looked at from an optics perspective from that. I think even just the way the draft lottery was handled wasn't great. They straight up spoiled the the fact that there was a third, like Kevin Weeks got really excited and kind of skipped over the fact that Columbus lost the lottery and went down to third. And, you know, for a team that a lot of people are saying probably shouldn't have even had their first round pick, is now going to get, you know, right after they bid farewell to the last, you know, sort of the closest thing we had to a dynasty, really, with those sort of early 2000s, or early 2010s to mid 2010s Chicago Blackhawks, they now have the next foundational potential face of the league. Mm-hmm. Everyone kind of knows, I would say, sort of that perspective of it. Let's talk about what it means for the actual rebuild for them. And basically, like, it really does, I feel like it's not even worth asking, what does it mean for the rebuild? It's very good for the rebuild.
Sure. It basically knocks 2 years off the rebuild. Because you have your number one center for the next decade plus.
You have your franchise face.
You get your franchise face. Now, looking at the Hawks roster right now, it's going to be a huge summer because they don't have much, especially up front. Like, if you were to try to construct a top line for Chicago right now, it would be Connor Bedard at center, which is pretty great.
Tyler Johnson. And Jason Dickinson.
I was going to say, Lucas Reichel, I would say.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm just looking at players that they still have under contract for next year.
Yeah, Lucas Reichel is still technically in the minors, I guess. But Jason Dickinson would also be in your top six. And, you know, he's more of a, you know, bottom six.
I mean, like, they're the only NHL regulars.
They're the only
up front.
NHL regulars.
Literally the only guys above the age of 25. Like Colin Blackwell is on for another year.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's like 24, 23, 24, 24, 25, 20. They've got no one
else. It's a lot of guys that are like still trying to find themselves in the NHL, and Chicago's giving them chances to do so, and that's all well and good. You know, they're a little, just slightly better on the back end where they do have veterans like Seth Jones and Connor Murphy.
Nikita Zaitsev.
And I would say it's funny because, you know, Lucas Reichel is kind of the gem up front in terms of their prospects, you know, not counting Bedard at this point. Otherwise, they've got some very intriguing defense prospects, and it'll be fun to see which of those guys, whether it's Alex Vlasic or Alec Regula, there's a couple more options down there. I mean, hey, maybe even Kevin Korchinski, who could still go back to junior next year. Maybe he even fights his way to a roster spot. Hard to say, you know, what their dynamics are there. But what I would like to see now from the Blackhawks is you got to bring in some veterans that can just kind of insulate Bedard, help him out, you know, help him along the way. Even if these are guys that you don't see in your long-term plans.
Oh, absolutely.
And I don't think just because of his skating, I'm not sure if he's a fit on a line with Bedard. But a guy like James Van Riemsdyk.
Oh, yeah.
Would be a player, and he's kind of gone through this before.
Oh, absolutely.
When he was in Toronto, where, you know, he's seen the good, he's seen the bad, you know, he's seen it all really in his career. He himself was a number two overall pick.
Yeah.
But for him to come into Chicago, if you could convince him to come in for a couple of years and just be that voice in the room, just sort of be somebody that can be there for Bedard. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't even say mentor Bedard because Bedard, he's got such a great head on his shoulders that I'm not even worried about that, but just somebody to be there to bounce ideas off and things like that. I really do feel like they need to keep, even if they overpay for that matter, if they overpay
for a
couple of veterans, my other really saucy thought,
and love saucy thoughts.
This will sort of go into something we'll talk about in a bit, but what if they acquired William Nylander from Toronto?
I always bring this up on every podcast I say, but because, you know, it's just true, but that happens in my NHL 23 Be a Pro universe.
Well, there you go.
Connor Bedard, though, did get drafted by Washington in that universe, so
fair,
interesting.
Fair.
And Brad Marchand is on the Canucks, which makes no sense and totally ruins the realism. But anyway, as I digress, look, you're 100% right, and I think when you, like, you know, obviously you look to the past for comparables, and, like, I think Connor Bedard needs his Gary Roberts, you know, like, his Steven Stamkos, or his, I'm not going to say late-stage Mario Lemieux, but I mean, like, Mark Recchi, or even though they won cups with him,
well,
or, like,
Bill Guerin for Sidney Crosby. Yeah,
that's what I was going to say, like, Mark Recchi or Bill Guerin for Sidney Crosby. Yeah. Like, they need those veterans that I think are around, and I think that's something that McDavid could have really benefited from in Edmonton.
Sure.
I don't think he really, really sort of had that. I think he said that, like, Derek Roy at one point was really good, but I'm like, you need someone better than Derek Roy for that. Like, it's, but I was thinking of someone as well in, like, I'm pretty sure his contract is up this year. Might not be, but, like, Nick Foligno would be great for that.
Yeah.
Maybe not on the line, but just, like you said, James Van Riemsdyk, he can still kind of put in those 17, 20 goals a year.
A power play with Bedard and JVR would be fun.
Net front.
Yes.
Just absolute merchants. Yes. It'd be crazy. But I do think that's a great idea. Look, this, the thing with Bedard, too, is going to Chicago. He could, if he lives up to the hype that he is, and, like, you know, I really do think that you don't score at every level and at the clip.
Yeah.
And in all, like, whether it's at the, whether it's in junior or at the world juniors or everywhere, he's just dominated everywhere he's been. I don't think it's possible to do that and not at least succeed to, like, an above average degree in the NHL.
Right.
I think if like, there just has to be, like, the Monstars have to steal his talent or something.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
He could become the face of the league. Like, this is not Connor McDavid in Edmonton. Just, and not like, no offense to Edmonton. I mean, like, it's just, like, even if that's just the Canadian market.
For a U.S. audience.
For a U.S. audience, which is, you know, has 10 times the people that Canada does.
Yeah.
Like, it, unfortunately, that's true. I think that he could become legitimately the face of the league if he does that. Like, it's...
I was also joking to myself that Connor Bedard, not only does he know he's going number one, but he also knows he's going to play in at least 3 Winter Classics.
A year.
Possibly, yes. Outdoor games,
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. It's crazy. Like, it's... I think, look, this... Chicago did, I would say, the most... Maybe not so much Arizona, because I think they, like, everyone was like, when it came to expectations, that, you know, it was a plucky band of misfits that sort of came together and, you know, like, were able to sort of finish in fourth last, and that was great.
Right.
But, like, Chicago really did do the most blatant tanking this year.
For sure.
They stripped everything down.
Yeah.
And they were, like, it's funny, I always say, like, I watch all the behind-the-scenes stuff for teams, like, because every team now has their own, like, HBO 24/7 self-produced behind-the-scenes. Chicago has one. And for the last, like, 2 or 3, they haven't even focused on the team. It's just been the prospects. Like, it's just been, like what is Frank Nazer doing?
Or Carter,
that's him, right? Frank Nazer?
Yeah.
Or you know, like, what's Kevin Korchinski up to?
Yeah.
Like, they haven't even focused on, like, usually it's like shots of the team getting on the plane and then in the locker room, then it's, like, the coach being like, we gotta hustle and do, you know, they haven't even done that. Cause they just know, like, there's no point. I think this is monumental for Connor Bedard.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that he develops some sort of a personality. That'd be great, cause I'm not sure if you watch those interviews, man, but.
Yeah, you know what? I think he's better one-on-one than in, like, at the World Juniors, he was very much like, let's pump the brakes here. Like,
well, he told
we're trying
us,
to win
do
a gold medal.
Do not ask questions about me. Ask questions about the team. Like, he didn't even let us talk to him about him.
Yeah. But I do, at least, like, you know, I have noticed that there are some superstars and future superstars who are very upfront about that. And it's like, I appreciate that. Because at least at that point, you can go into a scrum with Connor Bedard and say, what did you think of Shane Wright in this World Junior game? Or what did you think of Thomas Milic and Nett? And, like, he'll give you great stuff.
Yes.
It's almost like a very European way of doing things where it's like, I don't want to talk about me. Like, you know, I don't want to talk about what I do well. I need to improve on everything. Long term, one last point I'll make on this is Chicago will most likely be very bad again this season, which sets them up for a very high pick next year, in which case, you know, two of the top prospects are Max Celebrini, who I think is, like, not that far off of Bedard. Like, he just led the USHL in scoring as a 16-year-old and won Player of the Year. That's pretty unprecedented.
I was talking to some draft people, like, you know, just around the rank or whatever, and I asked them about Celebrini, and they said, like, if he was going to be drafted this year, he'd probably go, like, fourth overall.
Yeah, maybe even third.
Maybe even third,
I mean, because Fantilli, like, the size and the skating and everything would be pretty hard to pass up. And then you have Cole Iserman, who is just, like, a wicked goal scorer.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
On the level we haven't seen since, like, Ovechkin in terms of, you know, he's just going to pump in goals. So, I mean, a Connor Bedard-Cole Iserman pairing would be just hilarious to watch.
Or Connor Bedard Celebrini pairing. Like
that, well, they're both centers, so either you put one on the wing.
We never know who's gonna be a center, who's gonna be a winger when they get to the NHL.
But the way those two play the game,
it's gonna be center.
You would want both of them driving things.
I mean, if you look at their draft capital, man, like, even for this draft specifically, they have 6 picks in the first 2 rounds, 2 firsts, and 4 seconds. But even next year, like you say, they're going to have a really high pick. They might have two, because Tampa, who's going to have to make some really tough decisions this year, I don't think they're going to fall out of the playoffs or anything, but like they could, you know, they have that pick. And then the Leafs in 2025, we have no, and this is a great segue into our next topic, we have no idea what the Leafs are going to look like in 2025. We have no, like, literally there could be no one left from that core. Right. There could be, it could look completely unrecognizable. They could be in their 2015, 2016 arc of their new rebuild at right. that point. Funny enough, tonight's outcome will likely determine that. There so who knows? That could be a huge pick as well. Chicago is look, I think tanking is obviously extremely smart. Yep. It's obviously what you need to do. The way that the system is set up, that is how you do it. But man, it was tough watching some Chicago Blackhawks hockey this year. But at least, hey, you know, they it gave them a war chest that is crazy. Now, actually, not our next topic, but the second topic here is that we now know, obviously, that Adam Fantilli will go to the Anaheim Ducks. The Ducks and the Blue Jackets were my two top sort of landing spots for Bedard.
Right.
I thought it would have been awesome to see Bedard on a team with, like, Zegras and all of it, you know, Zegras, yeah. Terry, Mason McTavish, yeah. all of those great players. I literally said, you go back, like, you get Connor Bedard, you add him to that core, then you go back to the Mighty Ducks jersey, and instantly you have the most popular team in the league. Like, instantly you have a jersey that people will be wearing at, like, Coachella.
Right,
like, you know,
right.
it's crazy. And then you know, with Columbus, I think that could just build hockey in Ohio.
Yeah.
But we now know, you know, Fantilli will almost certainly go to the Ducks. Are they kind of in a better spot here?
Well, I think they're definitely ahead of Chicago, and this is really fun. This is something that just came out yesterday. The Anaheim Ducks,
I have it pulled up here, yeah.
had the top defenseman of the year in all three major junior
yeah.
leagues.
They had
Pavel Minchikov in the OHL, Olin Zellweger in the Dub, and Tristan Luno in the Q.
Yeah.
Obviously, they also have Jamie Drysdale, who's already been in the NHL, who's hurt most of this year, but... You know, their defense corps, they're going to have some fantastic competition coming up. And then, as you mentioned, you know, up front, they're not starved for talent. Like, you add Fantilli. And it will be interesting to see, does he go back to Michigan for a year or does he go straight to Anaheim?
Mm-hmm.
He is a late birthday, so, you know, he is older than Bedard. And, you know, he is already about 6'2", maybe even closer to 6'3". Great skater. He's got that great physical package. He's got the drive. So he certainly could contribute right away to the Ducks. And again, you know, when you have Zegras as your top line center, if Fantilli is your second line center, then you're not seeing all the best forecheckers or, you know, matchups. You'll still have some pretty decent line mates because, you know, the Ducks do have some talent there and they can add some more players over the summer. But yeah, this Ducks team, and again, they still have John Gibson in net as well. So,
yeah.
In what is clearly a very bizarre Pacific Division right now, as we're seeing from the playoffs in Seattle, just marauding, although Dallas is now catching up with them. You know, who knows what the Pacific's going to look like next year? Like, who knows how good Calgary is going to be? Who knows how good LA will be? You know, the Sharks, I think, are still going to be rebuilding, but, you know, Anaheim could be in that Buffalo situation, where it's like, you're probably not going to make the playoffs, but if you're playing important games in March, then that's kind of a victory. So I'm very intrigued by what the Ducks will look like next year, especially if Fantilli decides to leave the NCAA.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're in one of the most enviable sort of situations a team can be in, like for the future, I would say.
Yeah.
They're going to add a talent that, if it wasn't for, you know, literally like the next one kind of guy in the draft, would be far and away like the number one pick.
Totally.
You know, he's dominated every single sort of the numbers this guy put up in college as a freshman were insane.
And to lead the NCAA in scoring as a freshman
is you never see it.
Very impressive.
Like, do you know when the last time that happened?
I mean, I'd almost assume it was Paul Kariya, but maybe I'm wrong.
That's a long time ago, man.
That's a long time ago.
We're talking about a guy who's been retired for like 15 years.
Yes.
And like, this is during his college, incredible.
Yeah.
You look at the fact that they have all of their prospects basically, they ran the triple crown when it came to defense. And here's what I like about it too, is that the way that the team is situated now is that, you know, they let go of Dallas Eakins to become a just a hard to watch person on Sportsnet. Right.
And he's no Derek Lalonde.
And Derek Lalonde wasn't even a conversation for a different day. But now they have a GM in Pat Verbeek who's very aggressive, who wants to do things his way. Mm-hmm. Can now handpick a coach.
True.
He inherited Dallas Eakins.
Yeah.
Kept him around for a bit, likely to I don't know. Again, it goes back to our biggest argument of whether or not they want to be good this
right,
year.
Right.
But now they can pick that coach to the point where like we go, okay, this is the guy who's going to lead this like enviable group of young talent that's going to go up into the league. And what I like about it too is, look, no disrespect to the market, but like Connor Bedard is going to be facing a ton of reporters every single day. Adam Fantilli's just not. He's going to be true. Able to grow in just far more freedom. In without a fishbowl, he's going to be able to make mistakes. He's going to be able to, you know, learn. Like, because I feel like when you're in a big market, you're not able to learn. Because learning, it comes from failing and then succeeding by learning from that failure. But it's hard to learn from that failure when you fail and then every newspaper and every blogger and half of Twitter screams at you about how you failed.
Why does he only have 5 points in his first 10 games?
Look, Austin Matthews scores 4 goals in his first game in the NHL, and then I think he has like 2 in his next 8, and TSN goes, has Austin Matthews hit a wall?
Right.
10 games into his career.
Yeah.
After the
Was Patrick Laine better?
Exactly. And so I at the end of the day, man, like I think Fantilli, even from that perspective, just is set up for success better. He's going to have a new coach who will likely be picked with the sort of like knowledge that he is carrying this young group of, like, he's going to nurture this young group of talent. So they're not going to pick like Gerard Gallant.
Yeah.
You know, they know. They're likely going to pick someone who is able to connect with that generation.
Yeah.
To is more sort of like forward thinking in that group, and it's handpicked by a GM instead of inheriting it. Mm. And then he'll be able to fail, succeed, you know, learn, grow without, you know, being under a intense microscope that might limit that growth. I think it's a great opportunity for him. I think it's a great opportunity for the franchise, because I think there was a time in my life where the Anaheim Ducks, I remember being in like grade 1, grade 2, where they were like the coolest team in the league.
Yeah.
It was awesome. They had Solani, they had Korea, and everyone loved them. I thought they were rad as heck, man. And I think we have an opportunity for them to be rad as heck once again.
There you go.
All right, speaking of teams that are not rad as heck, the Toronto Maple Leafs, they had the opportunity to get swept tonight by the Florida Panthers. I don't even know where to begin with this. This is pretty tough for a team that finally seemed to conquer its demon. First of all, before I say this, before we get into like what potentially the fallout will be, does this sort of negate that slaying its demon? If they get swept tonight, does that negate their sort of slaying their demon narrative?
I don't think it negates the narrative, but it still is a huge disappointment.
Yes.
Because at least from an outside perspective, it feels like they were just happy to win in the first round. Now, I will say, it felt like, especially in game one, there was some pucks that just kind of rolled past the crease or hit the post where that could have been a very different game, but it wasn't. So you just have to go with what actually happened, and they did lose. They've lost 3 in a row, and I mean, hey, we don't know what's going to happen tonight. We're burying them before they're technically dead.
Exactly.
So if they win, then you can thank us for a reverse jinx, Leafs fans, but let's just assume that they lose this series. You know, I mean, a lot of eyeballs have been on that core four, the lack of production, and we were sort of joking about it before the podcast. Mm-hmm. You have the expected goals for in the fancy stats realm now, but as a cadre in training, I want goals for. Yeah. I expect you to score.
Expected by whom?
Exactly.
That's what I say.
Exactly. You just have to score.
Yeah.
It's nice that we expect you to score, but we want you to score. So what do you do? And I will say this, I was looking this up today, and I don't know if the market has the patience for
it. They don't. I don't even know what you're going to say, but they don't. I'm telling you right now. But
it took 13 seasons for Alex Ovechkin to win the Stanley Cup with Washington. So
he spent most of those, though, before Twitter.
Very true. Very true. But how much patience do Leaf fans have?
How much
patience does management have before you say, okay, you know, we had all the defensemen. And, you know, goaltending, I think, you know, Samsonov,
He's played well.
He's played well enough. Listen, that I think he's your guy.
Oh, yeah.
Moving forward, I don't think you need to search for another guy, especially if Joseph Woll turns out to be a pretty good, like, 1B. And Matt Murray, obviously, you still have him under contract, so you got to figure out that.
He's gone.
Fair enough. But at some point, you have to say, like, okay, well, what haven't we done yet? And that's what I was saying earlier with Nylander, where it's, like, fantastic player. You can get a great package back for him because he's still under contract next season.
At a very good rate, too.
At a pretty good rate, yeah. But, you know, what is that piece that you need to add? And, you know, we talked about Ryan O'Reilly and Nola Achari being exactly the type of players they needed, and then Luke Shen on the back end is the same. I think you try to re-sign O'Reilly.
I think he's re-signing. Yeah. I'll get into it when. Yeah.
And I think what you need is, you know, you're not going to get maybe a straight trade for Nylander. Like, maybe what you do, and I'm using Hibbs as an example because he's the most tangible because of his contract. But you move him and you get, you know, futures, but then you go out with that cap space and, like, you re-sign O'Reilly. But also, maybe you try to get a guy like JT Compher. You know, because your top six is going to be fine. A top six that has Matthews, Marner, Nyes now, you know, Tavares, Bunting, that's fine. And then, well, O'Reilly as well. It's that bottom six where if you can get those difference makers, you know, again, looking at like a Colorado, for example, and, you know, guys like Arturi Lehkonen that aren't, you know, your typical top sixers, but can get it done in the playoffs. And then, again, Valeri Nichushkin, a guy who was playing a top six role, but you look at his profile and it's like, awesome defensive metrics, and then, you know, he just happened to get red hot in the playoffs as well last year. It's those kind of players that you need to sort of, like, ferret out that it feels like they just need, like, a slightly different look where it's, like, when things get kind of grimy like this, you've got your Jordan Martinook, you've got your Joe Pavelski, you know, guys that just get it done. And then, obviously, with Florida, they have that kind of archetype guy in Matthew Tkachuk who can do everything. So, you know, I mean, what else can you say at this point?
Look, you're right in the sense that it seems like with every other team, they have a guy that, you know, they have these guys that will get it done, as you say. Whether, like, and it seems like with any other team, and this could, it could start tonight with Woll. They have a goalie who gets dropped in, and boom, he's able to win. Even, like, with Akira Schmid. Like, yes, he's turned into a bumpkin now, but he helped win them that first
round. He beat the Rangers.
Exactly.
They will make a statue for him.
You know, like, they you know, you have a Jordan Martinook, a guy who's able to get dropped in and just score those goals when you need to. The thing that you know, I think that it's different because if you look at those series with Ovechkin, you know, first of all, again, it came before Twitter. And I literally think that is a big deal because there wasn't, the way to hear voice criticism was you had to wait for Mike Milbury to be on, you know, NBC saying he's not a student of the game or whatever. Like, you weren't able to have, like, you know, some dude in Oakley's being like, I think Nylander is soft, trade him.
Right.
You know, like, I think Ovechkin's soft, trade him. Like, you know, stuff like that. But if you look at those series, like, Ovechkin always showed up. Even when they lost, you know, like, I remember when they lost that, you know, to the Penguins in the second round. And, you know, like, Ovechkin, like, there was a reason why that series is so legendary, because Ovechkin had dueling hat tricks with Crosby.
Yeah.
He was there. You know, like, and when it comes down to it, like, there, and we've seen it in this series, like, Leafs players are, they're wilting. Like, they are. Like, that core is wilting. And people, and here's the thing too, is people make excuses. They're playing through injury. It doesn't matter.
Everybody is.
Everyone's playing through injury. So I'm just gonna, like, I was writing a column after game three to sort of, like, fill that gap in between, because we had a 2-day layoff, which is the worst possible time for a 2-day layoff in this market. And I realized that it was a postmortem, but I'm just gonna spoil the lead, basically.
Okay.
Here's what I was saying. I was saying that Leafs fans, at the core of everything, they just want to be normal. They just want, it's like what everyone in society, deep down at the core, they just want to fit in.
Right.
And for a very long time, the Leafs have never had anything normal to celebrate. Their losses are always spectacular. They're always historic. They're always just legendary records.
Memeable.
Yeah, memeable, but like a record setting. Like, no team has ever done this before.
Right.
Or, you know, it's either you're blowing a huge lead or, you know, you're something like of that. And their wins are few or far between. They're usually followed by some sort of an asterisk. Mm. Whether it's like, oh yeah, you won, but it's like it still wasn't enough to get out of the first round. Or yeah. you won this, but this happened. And it seemed like for the first time in the time it took to birth a child and raise it to adulthood, Leafs fans were able to be able to cheer for something and cheer for their team in a way that every other fan base has gotten to basically at that in that point, in that span of 19 years. And I think if they get swept in the second round, that goes away.
Right.
I think if they get swept in the second round, that asterisk that is always hanging over them, waiting to sort of like undercut any success that they have, gets dropped. Because yes, you made it out of the first round, but then you got swept in the second round by the eighth seed.
Yeah, after you still haven't won a second round game in
yes,
19 years.
Yes, after having home ice advantage. Mm. You know, after having, and like Florida's done great because they literally had no pressure on, they're playing with house money at this point, but like this team, this Leafs team on paper is so much better than Florida on paper. Yeah. It doesn't matter in the playoffs, but on paper they are. So this is a disappointment. I think that goes away. And I think just based on the context of where this is with the team, I think the context of once again, the Stars, like look, Matthews hasn't played, you know, hasn't performed or played that well, but like he's at least able to put it. He got an assist in the last game. He's been able to do some things in this series. Be able to produce somewhat, or at least show that he's producing somewhat. Nylander has the numbers at least, but Mitch Marner, like
in a struggle.
This is once again, and I saw a tweet that is the most I think damning indictment of Mitch Marner is someone should tell Mitch Marner to play as hard in Game 4. As if, or play game four as if it was game 82 versus New Jersey and he was trying to get his 100th point. And I thought, oh boy, that is, that hits right in the
deep
heart.
Cut.
And I'm like, they're not totally wrong. Like it's, and so I, if you look at everyone else, like Riley has played very good.
Yep.
You know, like TJ Brody is getting tasked with doing so much. And I think a lot of this does then come down to the coach.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I can't believe I was saying earlier this year that Keith should get, you know, Jack Adams consideration based on the amount of injuries that they had and everything that I'm taking that away.
Fair.
I think I can't take that away because at that point in the regular season,
right.
he was doing what needed to be
yeah.
done. But I think when push comes to shove, you need a coach who's able to handle, and I think he's very emblematic of the team. He's not able to handle this pressure. He's not able to get out of his own head.
Right.
You know, there's that famous thing in the All or Nothing documentary where Paul McClain sitting in a boardroom going, like, they have demons under their bed, they have demons in their cars. I think Keith has that too, in the sense that, like, when push comes to shove, he galaxy brains these lineup decisions to the point where it makes absolutely no sense. And game two in Toronto, I'm in the press box, I'm watching, and I go, why? They're down by one, the goalie is about to be pulled. It's game two. You go down two games to nothing. That's a huge hurdle to climb because now you're going on the road. Why is David Kampf out there?
Mm.
Why is this happening? And then it happens again in game three. And then this. And then now to sort of, I would say like they're on the brink of elimination here. And Keith goes, all right. Well, I'm gonna go to my comfort food. I'm gonna put Justin Hall, who has been on for like 80 for literally 80%. Like again,
right.
he was the backbreaker goal
yeah.
was the Anthony Duclair breakaway in game three, and Justin Hall is the reason that happened.
Mm.
He was stuck in the middle, and you know, it's been time and time again, and for some reason he goes back to Justin Hall in the top four, and then on top of that, he goes to Alex Kerfoot in the top six. It's his comfort food, and I don't think, and like every coach has, we just covered this in Staff and Draft, every coach
right.
has coach's favorites or
yeah.
coach's pets, usually a role player, usually do this, whatever. But you cannot trust a coach in when there's literally an era on the line here.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot trust a coach to make those to lead them through it if he's going to make those decisions.
Mm.
He is not playing this lineup to the potential that they have. He has been out-coached in pretty much every playoff series he's ever been a part of as Leafs head coach. And I think if Dubas does stay, I think a big sort of like sort of mark in his tenure will be whether or not he can disconnect his personal connection with Sheldon Keefe and realize that he's not the guy for this roster. His regular season wins do not matter. Keefe is like the fastest coach to get to this milestone. He's got the best winning percentage. It doesn't matter. You look at his playoff sort of like record, his track record, it is not good enough. And he is not playing this lineup. He is getting his lunch eaten by the guy on the other bench every time. You cannot win a Stanley Cup like that. You can't.
It sounds like it's Peter Laviolette time.
I've been seeing people saying, like, Gerard Gallant, bring him in there. And I go, like, oh, cool, so you want none of the prospects to do anything. That sounds great. But, no, it's, like, I do think that, look, obviously the core can be better. Mitch Marner has turned into someone, I don't even know who the Mitch Marner I'm watching is.
Right.
Because the decisions he's making, like, he got nominated for the Selke. He's a legitimately, like, elite player in the NHL. And he is giving the puck away in a manner that I've never seen before. I don't know what is going on, but it all comes down to the coach and the situations that he is putting these players in, and you cannot win a Stanley Cup with Justin Hall in your top four. You cannot win a Stanley Cup with Alex Kerfoot in your top six, and when the chips have fallen the most in every situation, he has gone to that. It will not fail. Anyway, New Jersey, another team that's in an interesting situation here. They're down 3-1.
Yeah.
And look, they had a great sort of rebound game in game three. They came out, like, it looked like their strategy of getting mollywopped in games one and two and then coming out and just taking over the series in game three was working until we get to game four.
Right.
And I found it very interesting because it was a Dougie Hamilton quote, I believe, after last game. He said, like, look, when we get down, like, one or two goals, the game just runs away from us. Mm. Like, we cannot keep control of it, because if you look at all their losses, they have been of a blowout sort of fashion. What should New... Again, we're going to bury a team before they're even eliminated.
Right.
But what does New Jersey's offseason look like if, let's say, they get out in five or six?
Yeah, and, you know, with the Devils, a very different scenario from the Leafs, because
they
don't have that baggage, and this year was an unbridled success.
They are playing with house money.
Money to the point where my expectations for the summer is that, you know, Tom Fitzgerald looks at what he has already created and says, we're not far off.
Oh, not at all.
Jack Hughes has been the one we expected. Nico Hischier is a Selke finalist. That back end is looking great. Goaltending, this is where it's very interesting because, you know, Vitek Vanacek was very good in the regular season, but, you know, he got walloped in the playoffs, and then they brought in Akira Schmid, who is still really a prospect.
Yeah, he's 22.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, excuse me, for me...
You're getting emotional about this.
Apparently. Yeah. Or indigestion, at least. there's, you know, two very interesting things. One is, you know, Damon Severson is up for unrestricted free agency this summer. Can they keep him? I don't know.
I don't think they even want to keep him.
I don't know if they... Yeah, I mean, he's been a good soldier, but, I mean, they can replace him. I mean, you have Luke Hughes, who's obviously not the same style of defenseman, but is cheaper because he's on an entry-level deal and has incredible potential, some of which we've already seen at the NHL level. But my big swing that I would maybe consider if you were in New Jersey is... You know, it's interesting because Lyle Spector on THN.com talked about Connor Hellebuyck. Is he a fit for Pittsburgh? I say, would Connor Hellebuyck
be
a fit in New Jersey?
I think he'd be perfect for
a team that's still on the rise. Yeah. And if you're Connor Hellebuyck, you want to win now because you put in the work.
That's the only thing he cares about now.
Yeah, as well he should.
Yes.
Maybe you do some sort of swap where either Vanacek or, you know, Mackenzie Blackwood go to Winnipeg as part of the trade, and obviously, you know, New Jersey throws in some goodies on top of that. But a New Jersey team with Connor Hellebuyck in net, all of a sudden, maybe you're the favorite.
Oh,
at least, like, in the Metro, maybe you're even the favorite in the East next season.
I mean, look, there are obviously problems outside of goaltending in New Jersey, like the reason why they're at this point.
Mm.
But if you have a solid goaltender...
And somebody who can steal a game when you're not playing.
Exactly. Or even someone you can just rely on. Like someone who you know is going to go out there and stop 91.5% of the shots get thrown at them. That changes the game, man. That changes it completely. You add Connor Hellebuyck to even just this team in its current form.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're money in the bank. Like, I think that they're rolling over the Hurricanes right now. Because, like they said, the games get away, and that happens when you have a goaltender who gets scored on early, and then you realize, oh, man, well, like, we lose faith in this guy, and then suddenly you're overthinking everything.
Yeah.
Suddenly every puck skips over that next pass. Suddenly you're chipping it out instead of making stretch passes, and there you go. Yeah, I think this is – I think Severson's gone. I think, you know, he's been in trade rumors forever.
Right.
He's 28. He's going to test the market. So I think he's likely to be gone. But you have these, like we talked about Anaheim's defense prospects. Mm. Like you have Luke Hughes and Simone Nemich,
yep,
who are two of the best. The two best defense prospects in the NHL. Like
two of them, David Juracek.
Yes, like yeah. They are right up there. Yep. And if you need to, like Luke Hughes looks like he can step into an NHL role right now. Mm-hmm. And Nemich was very, very good in his first year in the AHL. And you know he can come out. Like you have great sort of back end success there. Then you find a way. You have a lot of money coming off the books here. You have to re-sign Jesper Bratt, but you also have Thomas Tatar coming off, Miles Wood coming off, who, you know, I think those two players, they're not going to be huge irreplaceable losses. Mm-hmm. You can get guys for cheaper. That's $10 million coming off the books right there.
You can re-sign Timo Meier.
Exactly. And then you at least still have his rights, right? Yeah. So you can do that. There's a lot to like about this team. I think it's literally opposite of Toronto in that, like, yes, they get bounced, and then I think the GM can go, well, yes, we got bounced, but like, how exciting is this that we can now take this? It's
a good start,
but like, how exciting is it that we can now take this to another level? Like,
it almost feels like those early Jonathan Toews, Patrick Kane, Chicago teams, yes, where it's like, okay, we're gonna take our lumps, but we're here now.
Yeah.
We know what it's all about. We have the talent. Let's take it to the next level.
It's almost like they have to kind of get through this because A, it'll teach them that, like, you know, nothing's going to be easy in this league.
Yeah.
But also B, like, they have to get through this because now they have a ton of money coming off the books. Mm. And it's almost like, you know, in a fantasy draft where, like, you have all, you get all this money off the books. Now you're like, oh, sweet. All right. Now I can dip into the free agents.
Right.
Now I can call up my prospects.
Yeah.
Like, I've been a GM, you know, MLB The Show. I played GM mode, you know, when I was unemployed before I worked here. You know, until like the 2030 season. I remember after every season, the off season is my favorite part because all my contracts came off the books, and I'm like, all right, now I can sign free agents. Now I can call up my prospects. Now I can do this. And I think honestly, it's gonna suck if they lose internally. But you can go in the off season being like, man, we are excited. We're gonna have so much cap space.
Yeah.
We have a great pipeline. We have Hughes and Heischer signed to two of the best contracts in the league. Until at least 2026, 2027, which is not even a real year. I think we've Dougie Hamilton signed for even longer than that. New Jersey Devils fans, they should be just be kicking back, being like, yeah, we lose. Who cares, man? This is going to be awesome. And I think it's going to be great.
Yeah.
All right. And then finally, it sort of ties into what we were talking about off the top of the show, Ryan, in that scoring has gone up in the playoffs. We are seeing blowouts, and blowouts include a lot of goals.
Yes.
What is going on? Why is scoring up in the playoffs this year?
Well, I think we kind of addressed it off the top. Is like it's the goaltending and it's the high octane offenses that we see. And I mean, what will be really interesting is like getting into the third round.
That's what I was going to ask.
What will
the
tone
continue?
Be? Yeah, I think it'll probably come down a bit because it becomes that war of attrition where more and more guys are banged up, bumps and bruises, things like that. And the stakes are even higher because you're one series away from the Stanley Cup. But it's kind of fun to see the big numbers, at least at this point.
Yeah, I'm really intrigued to see whether this will continue into the third round because we all know, you know, power play opportunities, they go down. You know, like games get tighter. I'm interested to see. Anyway, Ryan, you have rapid fire this week.
Tis rapid fire time. I think this will be a fun one.
I feel like I'm going to get absolutely clowned on this one because...
No, this will be a fun one.
Okay.
Yes, the terror factor is low on this
good,
one.
Good, 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 good.
Okay, so first question. What is your favorite television theme song right now?
Oh, Succession.
Current shows. I figured you would say that. That's a very good choice.
I would say Succession's like has the best theme like ever. Like, honestly.
It's up there. Mad Men was really good.
Like, Mad Men was really good. Yeah. But I mean, like, right now, I think if you go down the street and you're like, hum the Mad Men theme song.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm going to be able to do that. But I think if you were like Succession is like, you can put like rap lyrics over that.
Oh, yeah.
Or any lyric like that hits. That
Kendall fit. Wood.
Exactly. Yeah. L to the OG, really. Yeah. But you can put like, I always love that too, is my boy Squizzle. Cook this up. I'm like, who's Squizzle?
Totally.
We've never seen Squizzle before.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think like Succession is like a I would listen to that theme like walking down the street. That'd be
for sure. I started watching a YouTube video about the composer and then I got bored because it got really technical.
Yes.
But I will say my other favorite is Yellow Jackets.
I haven't seen Yellow Jackets, so that's the thing.
Fantastic theme song, because the show, you know, partially takes place in the 90s. So what they did is they had this couple write a song that sounds like it's from
the
90s.
Okay, that's perfect.
And my only quibble would be, a couple of weeks back, Alanis did a cover of it that they actually used in the opening credits. Should not have been Alanis. It should have been Kat Bjelland from Babes in Toyland, because that was a 90s band that really represented alternative music, not Alanis.
Now, the thing is, I was going to say Peacemaker, because I'm not sure if you've seen the Peacemaker opening credits.
No.
But it's like the entire cast does like a choreographed dance number.
Interesting.
But the thing is, a theme song, I think it has to be like original. Like it has to be, it can't be you using a licensed song, and it is using a licensed song.
Right.
But I also think Cheers, where everyone knows your name.
I actually got the Cheers parody Flaming Moe's stuck in my head the other night from The Simpsons. Yeah, I don't know how that happened.
That's great. I mean, I think the Family Guy theme, just like it, as quick as it is, it hits. I remember they say the S word in it, and I remember when I was in grade 5 watching Family Guy, that was really edgy, and thought that was cool. I said Simpsons, but like Succession is like. Like, you know the meme of the guy sitting at a piano playing it while it's on fire?
I don't know.
There is a meme of that. And that is what I think of when I, like, that song goes so hard. I would listen to that to, like, hype myself up.
Totally. Yeah, I agree. Okay, next question. Who is your favorite, and I apologize if I don't phrase this correctly, but who is your favorite, like, I'm going to call them villain guest star in a movie?
Ooh.
Which is to say, a character that only shows up for maybe like 10 minutes or so. They have one climactic fight scene against one of the good guys, but you really like them.
So it has to be a villain.
Yes.
So it's funny, because on the Rewatchables podcast for The Ringer, they call this the Dion Waiters Award. Not for villain, but like a guy who comes into the movie. He's only comes off the bench. He's only in the movie or on the court for like 10 minutes, hits like 8 threes, and then leaves.
Right.
You know, man, that's a really good question. Like a guy who's not in the movie very long.
Yeah.
He's basically like a secondary villain. Ah, man.
Yeah.
That's a really good question, because I'm trying to think of it.
I say this having rewatched The Raid 2 last night.
Oh, well, yeah. I think, man. Oh, John Wick Chapter 4. Have you seen the new
Not
John
yet.
Wick?
I
oh,
haven't.
Dude, first of all, it's the best action we've ever seen.
Like, very good.
Hands
things.
Down, it is art.
Yes.
It should win like the cinematography Oscar.
Nice.
Every shot is beautiful. Every shot can be the poster.
All right.
But they take a there's one scene where like there's three sort of deadly dudes.
Right.
Like there's like John Wick, and then there's two other guys. I'm not gonna spoil it, but there's two other guys. They all end up just by happenstance meeting at this club because they need to get one thing.
Yeah.
And the guy who owns this club, it's like sort of famous Hollywood stunt guy Scott Adkins.
Oh, okay.
And he did like the stunt stuff like Ben Affleck's Batman and just a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
But they have him in a huge fat suit.
Okay.
And he's got like a weird sort of like German, French, like Berlin, or no, I would say, German like accent. And these like fake teeth. And he's just like, but like he moves around like a stunt guy.
Nice.
But he's huge.
Yeah.
And I think that fight scene, just the way it's choreographed, it's awesome. He's funny. But he's like, he's funny and like you like to see him, but you also just think it's so like there's so much satisfaction when he eventually gets killed.
Nice.
That is, I don't even remember his name, but honestly, that is like
that
best like sort of villain guest star, because holy smokes, he's in the movie for 15 minutes, but man, that fight scene is just an absolute work of art. Like it's actually a work of art, and he is so compelling and so great.
Nice.
Love it.
Excellent. I'm going to go with Hammer Girl from The Raid 2 Redemption, fantastic. Like I said, I watched it last night again. second prize would go to Go-Go from Kill Bill. And she was also in Battle Royale originally, one of the best movies ever.
I have not seen Battle Royale.
It's fantastic.
I gotta get in on that,
Next question.
Okay.
What's a rap lyric that you just kind of think about every once in a while?
Oh man, this is a great question. I have a couple. One that really gets me though is it's in it's Martians vs. Goblins by The Game featuring Tyler the Creator, and the rap lyric, and this is right around 2012 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I remember this is when LeBron was on the Heat.
Okay.
And they lost. They were supposed to just like win everything because he's formed that super team.
Yep.
They end up losing to the Mavericks, who are way sort of out like
Outclassed.
It was literally just like Dirk Nowitzki and a bunch of other white guys. Right. And they were able to beat the LeBron super team. But the game goes like, fall back like LeBron's hairline against the Mavericks. That gets me. And then in quotes, and then you just hear like Tyler in the back goes, they lost. You
know? Oh,
and
then it's nice.
Like, oh man. And I'm a huge LeBron fan.
Yeah.
Love it. But like, holy smokes, that gets me. That's the only one I can probably say on the podcast.
That's fair. Yeah. That's a good one. Mine also is Odd Future. Related.
Oh, really? Okay.
The one that I always come back to is Earl Sweatshirt from the song Hive when he says, breaking news, death's less important when the Lakers lose. And because I work in sports and I think about fan bases all the time, I always think about that. Where it's like, doesn't have to be the Lakers losing, it can be any other team, but that just always pops into my
mind. My close runner up, and I love Eminem. You know, I was an angsty white kid growing up, so obviously I loved Eminem. But his newer lyrics are pretty rough, I would say. And one is, I can't believe this is a real lyric, but he goes, you ever heard of Kris Kristofferson? Well, I'm pissed Pistofferson. And I just went, hang it up, Marshall. But but the LeBron, fall back like LeBron's hairline against the Mavericks is pretty, that'll do it.
Final question. Mm-hmm. What is a fast food or junk food you have not tried that you really want to?
Ooh, that's a really good question because we have, I feel like the cop-out answer is like In-N-Out or whatever. I've never tried In-N-Out and there's just so much hype. But then I feel like when something gets that high, you know, there then becomes the backlash. People go... It became the sort of like In-N-Out is the best, and then because
it's good.
But then people are like, oh, it's not that good. There's one I've never tried. It's a really good question. I've never tried Jack in the Box before.
Oh, okay.
And I've heard that it can be kind of good. I've also, you know what? This is based on the Anthony Bourdain sort of, I would say, soliloquy about it. I've never been to a Waffle House. I would love to go to a Waffle House at like 3 in the morning.
Yeah, well, you don't want to be there at 3 in the morning, but...
No, but I feel like it would be fun to eat a meal
smoke?
And fear for my life. Fair. Yeah, I do want that smoke.
Want
yeah,
that
exactly.
Smoke. Right. Nice. For me, this is something I read about not long ago in Utah and a couple of states around Utah.
Oh, here's the Utah reference.
They've got this new, not even new trend, the first one was in 2010, but... They call it dirty soda, and it's basically these drive-through places that only sell soda and, like, cookies, but they mix, it's all mixtures. So it's like, it'll be like Dr. Pepper, but then they toss in, like, coconut and vanilla, and then they get, like I was looking at the menu of one of them the other day, and it was like Dr. Pepper, English toffee, and, like, half and half cream, or like Dr. Pepper and cupcake and raspberry puree, or like Mountain Dew and pineapple and blah, 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 and, it's literally like, that would be like the worst thing for you is just to get like pop and then they toss more sweet stuff in the pop. But I really want to go.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
I really want to try that. Maybe it's because like I didn't even realize at first how many of them were Dr. Pepper based and that's like my favorite.
You just love Dr. Pepper.
I just love Dr. Pepper. But I really want to go to one of these places. I am fascinated by them. And if I ever get the chance to go to Utah, I am going to either Swig or one of their competitors that I can find because that sounds very intriguing to me.
Well, I can't think of any reason we'd have to go to Utah at this point, so we'll see. But
that
sounds like a higher class like Coca-Cola remix machine.
It totally is. And, it's like if they turned it into a store.
And those are my favorite things ever. Like I will literally, you know, I used to live close to the Scotiabank Theater in downtown Toronto, and it's very well documented. I love going to movies on my own.
Yep.
Try and do it like once a week or whatever. And the Yonge and Dundas Theater is closer to me, like far close. Mm-hmm. It's just down the street. But I will literally walk like halfway across the city, basically, to go to the Scotiabank Theater because it has the Coca-Cola remix machine.
Right.
Because I want today, you know, Sprite Zero Sugar Grape.
Right.
Or I want, you know, like Barks Root Beer Zero Sugar Vanilla. Like, I can't
They
you
also
can't
have
do that.
Mr. Pibb in those machines.
I know, and
Mr.
Pibb
like
is very good.
Dr. Pepper's, like, arch nemesis.
Which is funny, too, because they don't call it Mr. Pibb anymore. They just call it Pibb.
That's true.
But I remember... like knowing that it was called Mr. Pibb, I think from like an American Dad episode or something. I remember going to like a Johnny Rockets when those existed with my friends, and I saw they had Mr. Pibb, or like they had Pibbs. I'm like, can I get like a Mr. Pibb? And everyone was like, why are you calling it Mr.? Why are you referring to it? So I'm like, it's just Pibb. And I'm like, no, you don't know.
Please,
yeah.
Please, my father's Mr. Pibb.
Yeah, call me
just
Pibb.
Call
me Pibb Extra, please.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's great. Anyway, is that it for Rapid Fire?
That's it for Rapid Fire.
That means it's it for the podcast. We'll be back next week. to potentially, you know, we're in Toronto, so it might be a nuclear fallout basically at this point. But if not, if we don't get caught up in the riots, we'll be here. And we will, you know, be teeing up the third round for you. Enjoy. We will see you next week.